Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to yet another edition of Plank of the Week. These things come around very, very quickly, but don't worry, we won't have to use up all the same names as we did last week because there's been fresh and new planks this week. There's so many of them, I'm not sure if 10 is going to be enough. I'm delighted to say Belinda DeLucy returns after a couple of weeks away, and my good friend James Max from the Early Breakfast Show on Talk Radio has also joined us, and you two have never met, amazingly.
We have not.
So here we are. Congratulations and welcome to the Planks panel. Yeah. Now, I feel as though, because James hasn't been here for a while, we should let you kick off with your first Plank nomination.
Thank you very much indeed.
Not at all.
I'd like to start off with somebody who, I had to say, I didn't know who he was, and I probably should do. Maybe I should care. But this is a chap called Maros Sefcovic.
Yes.
He is a Slovak diplomat, but he's also serving as a vice president of the European Commission.
Of course he is.
And he is the guy who's fundamentally said, if you don't come to some agreement or sort out what's happening with Northern Ireland and you act unilaterally, then we are going to have war. We're going to hold you to the letter of the law. And this is a guy who seems not to understand that there are probably some hurried and rushed bits of this piece of legislation which doesn't do any good to anybody. It doesn't help the European Union, it doesn't help the United Kingdom, and it certainly doesn't help the people of Northern Ireland at all. And what we really should be doing is, look, the deal's been done, we've all moved on. Brexit wasn't the big terrible thing that everybody said it was going to be. And in fact, the pandemic has shown that a lot worse things can happen, thank you very much indeed.
Yeah.
And
especially if you're still in the European Union. Well, you would have been vaccinated by now.
Well, exactly. And we need to have practical solutions. And if people have made mistakes, I'm sure there are mistakes on both sides. But this guy, relic from the past, bit of a cretin, clearly, paid for, probably still by us in some indirect or direct form.
Yeah, pensions.
Pensions and everything else, and accountable to nobody. He went into the election of his Slovak country, lost the election. Oh, now you have a lovely commissioner's position and probably very well paid out
of it.
And
also, you know what he's threatening? He's basically threatening that if nothing changes by the end of June, which is when apparently the timetable runs out, how many times have we heard that? There's another deadline, you know. Apparently we won't be able to sell sausages to Northern Ireland from Britain. So from British sausage makers, they won't be able to sell sausages to British people who live in Northern Ireland, which is in Britain. That's what he's saying.
And which, again, there will be, of course it's such a wide agreement, there will be things that don't make sense. What you should do with something that doesn't make sense is have a look at
them. Tear it up.
Tear it up and come up with a new solution. And you don't have to go back to it's the treaty. Just be pragmatic. We've moved on now. We've done the thing, we've done the deal, we've done everything else, let's move on and let's make sure that we try and do more trade together instead of stoking tensions and being, frankly, cretinous.
Well, all this warmongering sort of rhetoric is actually quite funny because we've seen Macron do lots of willy waggling against the Brits with Jersey and the sausage walls just kind of follows in that whole,
it does.
No, I'm bigger and stronger Putin thing. But the EU are not interested in a solution. There's no political will for it. So unfortunately, it needs to be scrapped and started again. The EU are just embarrassing themselves.
Well, they keep more or less saying, and you'll know a lot about this from having worked over there, they don't want to lose face. They don't want anyone making fun of them. Well, don't they realise that's what we've been doing for our entire existence?
But you see, that's the European attitude.
We make fun of people in Europe.
Yeah, but that's the European attitude, which comes down to this whole losing face, as opposed to, can we just be pragmatic? Can we come up with a solution that really works and is good for everybody? Because you know what? More trade is good for everybody. Yeah. It's more jobs, it's more opportunity, it's more cooperation, it's everything that we need to have. And in the same way that this guy is being a fool when it comes to negotiating on this particular point, we've also got people who don't want to lose face when it comes to financial services. All the technical expertise is here in London. Don't kill it off, because it's not going to help you by killing it off either.
Right. That's the point. But also, I mean, when you talk about the way that somehow the European Union still thinks that we are part of their organisation, therefore they will punish us for doing whatever it is that we did. You know, I'm sorry. You know, we're not in it anymore, so you can't actually punish us. It's like somebody coming from your old school saying, you know, I'm going to give you 500 lines to do. And you go, actually, no, I left school quite a long time ago. I'm not going to do
exactly.
Get lost.
Don't want to hear from you. But then the other thing is, oh, but they'll take our money. Yeah. So, you know, we come up with rules and regulations on travel. We may or may not like them. And suddenly, you know, it's, yes, we'll welcome you. Yeah, why? Because you want our money. You wanted our money on the EU, but you wanted it on your terms. Mm. And it's the same as before. So, you know what? I think we should probably say, actually, let's kick at the travel into Dutch for a while. Let's spend our money here in the UK.
Well, why not indeed? If you can find somewhere to go, that is, because well, if you looked around, there's hardly anywhere to go because everything's
Israel?
Booked up.
Israel?
No, but I mean, Israel was looking good until the old Hamas attacks started coming in. But, you know, the other thing about talking about losing face, just before we started this show, ladies and gentlemen, we can tell you, and you'll probably have seen this by the time this comes out, Emmanuel Macron getting slapped around in France when he's out on a walkabout. Have you seen it?
Zut alors, he got slapped around the chops. Like,
unfortunately,
like
it wasn't by a woman.
Funny. But it wasn't.
I think he was out visiting in the southeastern region of France, apparently, some restaurateurs. Yeah. So imagine if they're anything like the people in this country who haven't been able to open, you know, for the best part of a year. No wonder he got a slap.
But here, if people were protesting, they're probably just tut. Yeah. Whereas in France, they've either got to burn animals or slap.
Yes, or tyres. They like a tyre burning.
Oh, they
as
love
well.
Like
a blockade of some kind.
Yeah, blockade.
It was such an effeminate French slap. It was so like this. And yes.
It's
you know,
a boof.
Take that, you little pot pie. You know, it was just so perfect. And poor Macron, red face, got hurled away by his bodyguards. But it's a joy to watch. It's theatre. And
it
the
is.
EU, every single day, you know, prove us right to have
left. Well, one of my favourite moments in the whole history of political study is John Prescott, you know, that time when that guy threw an egg at him and he just whacked him. And it was brilliant. I remember being, I was working at the Daily Mirror at the time.
But John Prescott used to do the...
You just think that's great. But that's brilliant, though, isn't it? That's what you want.
Yes, but was that better? Or was Chumbawamba when they went over with the bucket of water?
I preferred Prescott punching the guy, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, that was... I mean, to anybody else, that would have been a career-ending move.
But not for him.
Not for him, somehow.
No.
Well, the Brits are all taken with milkshaking now. Forget the slaps and the eggs. It's like, take that strawberry McDonald...
Right, although nobody's had that done for a while, so I don't know whether they're going to move on to something
that
else.
That was reserved only for Nigel.
Yeah. Yeah,
everybody loved
milkshaking
Nigel.
Poor guy.
Although I think somebody also then milkshaked Tommy Robinson, didn't they? Which was quite funny as well.
Yeah, that's true.
So there we are. So, Belinda, tell us who your first nominee is.
Right, well, my first nominee is Priti Useless Patel.
I love this. Pretty Useless Patel.
And I'm a
poor
fan
woman.
Of hers. You know, this woman, I loved all her rhetoric last April.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop the crossings and look to me. I'm doing the great big muscle speech and I'm going to have the sovereignty back of this country and control our borders. No, she hasn't.
No.
In fact, even
worse. In fact, it's got worse.
It's got so much worse. And that's not even the reason why she's my plank this week.
Oh.
She's my plank, apart from that monstrosity of a failure to control our borders, is that she, I think it was yesterday, urged social media companies to take down footage of people filming migrants
putting on TikTok.
Crossing because it glamorized the journey. I'll tell you what glamorizes it, love. It's sending the Navy in to French waters to scoop them up and bring them back to their shores, escorted in a chariot. Back to our shores, that's glamorising it, accommodating and feeding people who mostly want to try their luck.
But I don't know what's worse here. So on one hand, you've got that. So the French escorted the boat over, even though it was really close to the French shores. So a strong foreign secretary would be saying to the French, look, this is not acceptable. You cannot bring somebody, you know, that there must be a line in the middle where, of course, we are people's safety, but you don't just drag them across the channel so that you can dump the problem on us. So that would be a strong. And secondly, on the borders, what a total shambles we have had since COVID began.
Yeah.
How can you not organise it? How on earth?
Well, you see, today
when you've got less or fewer people, can you not organise and know who's coming into the country and how long they're staying for?
No idea.
Well, there's a massive problem, not just because of the people who land and get picked up by the border force, but there are loads of people who actually don't go anywhere near the border force because I know what it's like down in those parts of the world, and there are lots of beaches where the dinghies just pitch up, and the people get out the dinghy, just run into the town.
Well, and let's
and
be
you
honest,
see them again.
These are
nobody
mostly,
knows where they are.
They're mostly young men.
Yeah,
thousands and thousands of young men. Is anyone asking the girls, the women, the teenagers in these areas where these men from war-torn countries with very different attitudes towards women are suddenly disappearing into our local towns and villages. No one asks us how we feel about it.
Well, did you see the kids on the front page of the Telegraph this morning? These little kids looked lovely, actually, but they looked pretty healthy. They looked reasonably well looked after, and they were waving and smiling to the cameras, you know. And I have nothing against the children, but, you know, this is now on an industrial scale.
Yeah. But there they're also people, using children people, on an industrial scale to do that.
Yeah, but they're basically moving people around the world, you know, for all sorts of reasons. And they've now worked out that it's a very easy thing to do to get them into Britain, because once they're here, they'll never leave.
Never leave.
There's about 1,500 people that the Telegraph was reporting on today who have not been judged to be admissible under asylum, right? None of them have been taken back by Europe, because they're supposed to take them back, but they're just not doing it. So we're stuck with them.
How much do you think Pretty Useless is useless? Because whatever her rhetoric, she doesn't have the confidence of her staff, who then undermine what she does.
The civil service, they need re-educated, just like the BBC staff. They all need re-educated, and they have far too much power. And so I think that's not helping. Our border force
are useless.
But
I think, but I think also there's the legal framework. The legal framework does not allow us to actually, even with any certainty, look at somebody coming on a dinghy and saying that's illegal. Because a human rights lawyer will say, actually, it's not illegal, because you can get in a boat, you can sail across the channel, and you can claim asylum in Britain, even if you've lived in France for 4 years, because there's no law that says you can't. Because like everything else that we deal with, the asylum laws are about 50 years out of date.
A 1951 Refugee Convention was a totally different time, where mass migration and people smugglers making billions out of human trafficking just didn't really exist.
The only people that had dinghies in those days were the army.
Were the army, but you know, since 1998 in this country, a quarter of Islamist terrorists in this country have gone through our asylum process and have either been rejected or accepted. That Libyan who knifed those poor three gay guys in Reading, he was an accepted asylum seeker who'd been able to commit crimes and still stay in this country. The whole thing's broken and Priti Patel has to take accountability.
And she has, I mean, she's not like she's only been in the job a short time. She's been in the job quite a long time now, and I appreciate it's a hard job, but as Anne Whittaker pointed out the other day, it's not as hard a job as it used to be, because they've now siphoned off justice out of the Home Office. So she's not in charge of absolutely everything.
Well, she's not in charge of absolutely everything, but I think the problem is that she's so concerned about making sound bites and making commentary about saying how important it is to do certain things that she's forgotten that in fact she needs to set the strategy. And the strategy is wrong. And because there is no strategy, it makes it difficult to execute. And because it's difficult to execute, it means nothing gets done.
Well,
and that's the problem. If you're going to play the soundbite game, then don't do that job.
Exactly.
Also, unlike all of us, she hasn't, I assume, really worked. I don't really count her parents' shop as a business. She hasn't really worked in a business where you have to look at what the problem is, how you're going to fix it, right? She should be going to the Justice Secretary and saying, this is what we need to do. These are the changes in the law that we need to make. This is how we get out of the European Court of Human Rights. This is how we stop these mad lawyers from stopping us from deporting people.
It's not just the British taxpayer that gets screwed over. The real victims, the ones that are really persecuted and too poor to travel and shop around safe countries to where they'd like to stay, they're stuck in these conflict zones. Yeah. The Yazidis, Christians, gays, girls, they never get a look in. You know, we leave them and we've spent all this money on the wrong people. Mm. So I think the whole thing needs to be reset.
We often spend money on the wrong people.
Well, absolutely right.
That's often the way.
I've done a bit of that in my time, spent money on the wrong people.
No, really? You know, what's her name?
Sorry for another day. And they went to your blank.
The innocents wouldn't like it. Now, speaking of people who are a waste of money and time, Jenny Eclair. Now, I don't know much about Jenny Eclair, apart from the fact that she used to be a comedian. I mean, I don't know what she does now. I don't know whether she still writes books or whether she still does shows.
I think she does all of the above, but complains about new talent.
Does she?
Having come through and not having to have work in the same way that she and maybe others had to.
Really?
Yes.
So she's a bit of a has-been then, in other words. Washed up.
Yeah, washed up or never was.
Oh, perhaps never was. I never found it particularly funny. Anyway, this weekend, she did what many people are doing at the moment, which is basically, you know, flip her lid over something to do with COVID, because she's one of those who thinks that everybody should be wearing a mask in public. However, she did it in quite a foul-mouthed way, which ordinarily I would applaud. But this is actually quite a nasty tweet. She put out this tweet at 5:08 on Saturday. Why don't all the C-word... plural, who don't want to wear masks on public transport, travel in the same C-word carriage, rather than making the rest of us feel peed off and on edge. Mm. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, we've all travelled on public transport at some point recently. I mean, if I'm on the tube, I wear a mask. But what I don't do anymore is wear it all the way through the station. I now just put it on for when I'm actually on the train. And I don't wear it on the platform or on the escalator or anything like that.
Oh.
Because I've had enough of it. It's too, and it's also, I find it really suffocating. I just don't like it.
Nobody's
said anything. I mean, if I'd done that probably a month ago, I think people would have said, put your mask on. But they don't now.
I think we are moving towards the end of mask on.
Yes. Mm. But I think to be that rude about people, because as people pointed out, well, there are lots of people who might be not wearing a mask for lots of reasons. Now, she says, I'm only talking about those who don't want to wear them, as opposed to those who have a good reason for not wearing them. But I think the problem that we've got in this country now is there are too many people who are too nosy about what everybody else is doing. You know, if you want to wear a mask, wear a mask. Well, but don't ever go at somebody who isn't.
Well, I think there is an element of... first of all, if you're going to have a rule, then you need to make sure it's enforced. But it's not down for individuals of the public to start tutting and getting cross with other people.
Well, it starts to get tricky as well, because if Jenny Eclair is presumably not a black belt in karate or something, but I mean, if she starts going up to people and having a go at them, there are some pretty nasty people out
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
Yeah. I bet she's a right old snitcher as well, one of those snitching little curtain twitching, dobbing your neighbours. I bet she's the queen of the snitches. Mm. I'm sorry, but to be that aggressive, and these hashtag be kind types are always,
always the
quickest to hate. Yes. And I'd far rather be in the carriage without masks. I think it'd be a lot more fun than actually being stuck in a carriage with mask-wearing, frightened, panicky rabbits in the headlights.
Oh, I know, absolutely right. And in fact, there's another one, because I wasn't quite sure whether I could do these two separately, but I think I'm going to do them together, but put them under the Jenny Eclair umbrella.
Well, it's his show.
Well, I can do anything I like. Yeah, exactly right. So James knows. He's got a show as well called Between the Sheets, which you should do, actually. Should get her on that. There's a woman called Kate Mulvey. I don't know if you know her. She writes for The Telegraph. She wrote a piece at the weekend about people who hadn't been vaccinated, basically saying that she would never ever dream of inviting somebody who hadn't had a vaccination to a dinner party in her house. And you're just going, what is wrong with you? You know, either you have friends or you don't have friends. So now you're going to pick your friends based on whether or not they've had a vaccination.
I mean, if somebody doesn't want to have the vaccination, surely it's their choice.
Well, exactly.
I do understand that there's a very small chance that, you know, this thing will continue and all the rest of it. But we also know the stats that, generally speaking, if you've had both doses of the vaccine and it's effective, you are far less likely to catch it. And you're even less likely to be hospitalised and even less likely to die.
Yes.
So,
but there is this narrative, though, isn't
there? But you could die from anything.
Well, of course. I mean, you could invite somebody around for dinner and they have a heart attack in the middle of it. You know, sometimes that happens.
Well, that could happen after one of your hilarious jokes.
Well, it could happen. It could very well happen. You know,
I mean, you know, anything could happen after one of those.
Oh, it's such snobbery, though. Look at it. It was the same with Brexit. It's going to be the same about climate change. Oh, I'm not having the people that have petrol cars around for supper.
Yeah, please don't bring your petrol cars to party on my drive.
Parties, the Foreign Office drink stews, all these people who attend these things are actually incredibly prejudiced against, I think, working class, normal Brits who don't give a fig about a lot of these
ordinary
precious
people.
These
Why
precious
do we use
little...
the term working class anymore, though?
Because
I don't
still...
think it actually means what it used to mean.
Well, yeah, I think you kind of know what it means.
Yes,
though,
I know,
you?
But what we should really be talking about is instead of saying... the only normal people are people you don't know very well. But what I would say, though, is when you're talking about...
I think normal's a word you can't use anymore, can you?
Well, let's
normal.
Hope not.
Oh, God.
Because compared to what?
Yeah, compared to what?
You know.
But people who work... So instead of saying the working class, it's actually people who need to work, have to work, want to work. Those are the people who very often get marginalised around the edges because of all these other things which are going on. So I think when you start to talk about the working class, in fact, there are people, you know, who are all sorts of different levels of wealth, if you like, who are curtailed from doing what they're doing, either because their parents wanted them to do better. It's not my choice where I was sent to school, aged, you know, 5 or 7 or whatever it was. I didn't say, well, mummy, daddy, I'd like to go here or there because I'd like to speak a certain way. You don't have that choice. You know, so to be discriminated against for that is just as bad as discriminating against somebody who went to another school and doesn't have an accent that
people say. Well, how
about you
don't discriminate against people?
Exactly.
And unfortunately, the ones that have all the power tend to be the dinner party lot. I mean, until Boris managed to get in, we were run by the chattering metropolitan, I don't know what to call them now, but you know exactly what I mean.
The Notting Hill set.
The Notting Hill set. I remember first being asked to do any questions for Radio 4, and they couldn't believe I was a Brexiteer.
Really?
They were shocked. I think it was David Dimbleby who does that. He was like, what are you doing in the Brexit party? Because I spoke a certain way. And that kind of thing made me think, oh my gosh, you really put
it's
people in boxes.
But it's been a terrible shock for an awful lot of them, because they can't believe, one, that people like you are in the Brexit party, or were, and also can't believe that their side lost.
Yeah.
They don't get
they
it.
They still don't they get don't it. Get they it. Don't understand. They don't get it. And they think that anybody who voted against it doesn't understand.
Yeah.
And particularly the younger you are.
I mean,
are,
you talk about let's move on. I mean, these are the people who won't move on.
No.
The likes of Andrew Adonis and A.C. Grayling, you know, and all these nutters. They are literally crazy.
They are driven insane.
They have a syndrome. They've passed all the steps into a denial and all the rest of it and grief, and now they've just gone bonkers.
Yeah,
now.
They have. They literally have.
But also, so, as the stats come in, that Britain is making great progress economically, you know, in terms of all sorts of world trade, international trade. And I don't think people have realised how much our world has changed as a result of the technological advances which have been driven through the pandemic and COVID and all these things. The world that we're going to be sort of back into is going to be completely different. Yeah. And we are in a much better place to tackle it.
Yeah.
Yes, that's I think true. So. And we've come back round to your second nomination.
Hooray.
As a result of that. So,
so I'm going to talk about somebody, and I don't know very much about this or the individual or anything else. But what I do know is that this kind of plankery are people who have little or no consideration of others. So this story is one example of it, but there are plenty. Mm. So the one example that I want to pick is there's a farmer who wanted to get into his farm and some individual...
Oik.
I was going to say oik, and then I thought, no, I won't use that pejorative language.
Because they're not going to be judgmental.
Although I have seen the picture of him.
You were busy that night anyway, Mike.
In his shorts with his top off.
He didn't have a shirt on, in my
exactly,
view.
Exactly, shirtless.
You know, walking around shirtless.
I don't care how many...
It's not the done thing.
No, exactly. I don't care how many cakes you've got.
Yeah,
you,
yeah.
No, you wear a shirt. Anyway, so he wasn't wearing a shirt, he was a shirt. So he parked his car in front of a farmer's gate, so the farmer couldn't get out. The farmer then gets his rather expensive piece of machinery, and it's like a forklift thing, and it pops it over.
It's a forklift tractor, isn't
it? And then just flipped it over his gate, off his land. Get off my land! Onto the country road, and then in said manoeuvre, I think the driver was trying to berate him or do whatever, and got knocked over.
But he was trying to
process.
Kick the forklift a couple of times.
Yeah,
as well.
He was. I mean, idiot.
I mean, I presume there's some kind of history between these two guys.
I don't think
there
is.
It's not the first time he's done it.
Well, I think it's not the first time that the farmer has been blocked into his land.
Right.
And I think that farmers get a very bad rap because they've got a very busy and difficult job to do. They're trying to keep the land safe. They have all these paths that people can just walk through. We've got a lot more people who are using the countryside. Great, that's very nice. Use your countryside, but be respectful. So this then links into the other side of it, that if you're anywhere near the coast or an area of natural beauty, so a lot of people have been coming to visit. I get it. I understand why, because everybody's going crazy.
Are you saying you live in an area of natural beauty?
I know.
He said modestly.
It is now
that you're there, right?
You haven't been tutting at all the walkers, have you?
I haven't been tutting at the walkers.
Have you?
No, I have been tutting, however. People have been visiting the seaside and the bins get full. And then they think that it's okay to either leave their crap on the bin, or on the beach, or next to the bin.
Yeah, that's shocking.
Take it home with you. It's not difficult. In the same way that we would berate dog owners for not picking up the dog's poo, I would berate, you know, all the tourists and the people who are the day trippers who come down. Take your stuff home with you. Do not leave it on the beach. The sea won't wash it away and then it's gone forever. It'll wash back up again. Same with fishermen. Take your rubbish away with you. Stop leaving it and stop fishing on beaches where, you know, all the tourists are, you know, people are coming to swim. Just be a little bit more aware of those around you. So if you're visiting the countryside, don't park where you shouldn't. If you're visiting a village, be respectful of the villages and the people and the people who live there.
Yeah.
And if you're going to an area of natural beauty, take your rubbish home.
It's funny, actually, because we did a story the other day about a pub in Devon, which at first I thought was doing the wrong thing. But then the more I thought about it, I thought, actually, it's the right thing. And it was this little town in Devon, and the pub only had 7 tables. And they had a sign outside saying, locals only, right? So if you went down there as a tourist, you couldn't get into the pub. And I was talking to somebody about it, and they said, yeah, but if you went to the Horseshoe, which is our sort of local pub, and they suddenly said, sorry, Mike, you can't come in today because it's full, which is a place I go at least twice a week, maybe sometimes more, had a birthday party there and all that, you know, I wouldn't be happy either. So actually, I think there's something to be said for sort of local usage of a place. And I know that if you live, you know, in a seaside resort like you do, you're going to have to put up with some of that. It's a bit like if you have a beautiful house that happens to back onto, you know, Salisbury Plain. You know, you might see a few tanks rumbling by every now and again. If you live near an airport, you're going to get planes. But I think you're absolutely right.
I disagree.
People are not.
You what?
No.
Well, this is good. I want you to disagree with
I disagree. I think if you have a pub, then during busy time, the locals should be like, well, can I book a table? Because I know it's going to be busy time.
Yeah, but it's quite a small place, though. Seven tables only.
I think there you're suddenly discriminating now against people.
You're not disagreeing with my premise, which is if you go and visit a place, be respectful.
No, I'm not disagreeing with that. But I also think that council should provide bigger bins during peak seasons on beaches. I think it has to work both ways. I think it's constantly, you know, it's all up to you to take your rubbish. That's all
yes,
I'm
but
good
then
for
the
to say,
locals
but
end up paying
won't.
For that. The locals end up paying for that because if you're going to have more collections and more everything else, you know, if you provide a certain amount of
stuff...
We
mean the council actually have to do some work.
But the council do lots of work.
Manage their money properly. And also, there will be people, sadly, who always will leave their rubbish. And I think in peak seasons, add a few more bins, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The whole thing is interesting. I agree with you. I'm not saying that you're wrong. Whatsoever.
Good.
But you know.
I agree with you too,
but I think there are some sensible solutions.
But there is a point, though, just on pubs, where there's a range of Suffolk pubs who are getting very upset about people who are booking tables and then no shows.
And they're not showing
And
up.
I think that in an industry that has really suffered and has done everything possible to open, I would support the pub industry and say, actually, take deposits.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are doing that.
Yeah, they're starting to.
Yeah, keep the deposits.
And cancel tables if 10 minutes late. You've got to do that. They're struggling on their knees.
That's the only kind of cancel culture that I am accepting.
Yes.
Yes.
Fair
enough. Exactly.
Okay.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
We're getting very excited today. So let's have your second one, Belinda.
Right, my second one is Sir Bob Geldof.
Bob Geldof.
Or Bob the Snob.
Who could
forget? As I like to call him.
Oh, isn't he Sir Bob?
Oh, Sir Bob, fine, but
except technically he's not really, is he? Because he's Irish. He can't use it, apparently.
Oh, well, he probably threw it in the bin anyway. But anyway,
Bob. Stuck two fingers up at it.
He is a vomit fest. For me, he is one of the most cringeworthy celebs. Need to get out of my system.
Wow.
Right, I mean, forget about him.
No, I want to hear this.
No, Bob's wound me up. So, 2 days ago, he was on camera with this whole cut to the aid budget thing that the Tories are putting through. 0.7 down to 0.5, which, by the way, is still, you know,
it's
vast amounts of money
and
far more than most countries.
And I would say absolutely cut it.
And absolutely cut it. So Bob comes on and he does his usual soup of sick, ramming down the throats of the poor British public, emotional blackmail tactic. And he's like, you're stealing the bread out of the starving children in Yemen. You're taking the textbook from
Have
a child.
Have you seen what
the
they
tin.
Spent that money on?
And I'm like, shut up one moment, Bobble Lobbles. You, mate, you know full well most of this money goes to subsidising countries with space programmes and nuclear programmes. A lot of this money doesn't go to help saving lives. It goes to furthering British interests and their influence. And enough. That money, let's give to the British people, which our government has the priority to protect their interests first. Ring-fence the money that does save lives, you know, outside the UK. Fine. But
on the other hand, I know that lots of people think that we should be doing this, but, you know, we've got plenty of lives to save here. Why do we have
to
save everybody else's lives?
But Bob doesn't give a toss about the lives here.
But also, I get very irritable, and I think you're right to pick it out, where you have people who have made so much money that they can then stand on their platform to then make these comments about the rest of us and how it's right to spend this money in this way. I would like to see money that we allocate, rather than say, and I hate it when politicians say, X percent will be spent, because then you are forcing money to be spent probably on the wrong things. I would much rather have a set of objectives where they talk about and say, this year we will try and save X number of lives. This year we will try and...
Yeah, but why though? We don't need to do that. And well, we I think we do have it anyway.
No, but we do have a responsibility, I think.
Do we? Yeah, I think so.
To do certain things elsewhere. Well, and if it does further our interests.
Because we're one of the richest countries in the world, and actually the mismanagement of previous governments and this government in helping our poor has also come into play at why so many are in squalor in this country. But it is essential, and I also believe it's our duty to help really struggling people that are far worse in war zones and things like that in other countries.
What are Oxfam for? What are Save
well,
the Children
for? Well, you don't
for?
Know where the money goes.
Well, have you seen?
Well, I know where the money goes. It goes into their buildings in London and New York and
well,
everywhere.
Well, it rather goes into nefarious activities overseas,
well, that's
which is why
story.
They're having real problems
that's
raising
story.
Money. Look, I do agree that agencies is probably a much better way for us to do it if they were run properly. But I also think that we do have a moral responsibility to do certain things in a globalised world. But I think we need to stop spending money in a way that is not accountable.
Yeah.
And I also think that people do need to have fixed targets and objectives in the same way that a business that's going to go and do things, they will say, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, and this is how you can measure our success.
Yeah.
We don't do that with government money. They seem to just be able to spend
it. Hand it out.
Yeah. And the British are incredibly charitable people. We are, I think, the third most generous out of all the countries in the world in foreign aid. We're in the top 10 at the most charitable people. We give the most charity.
Right.
And we keep getting told we're bad people, not giving enough, we're not spending enough on people outside of the UK.
But that's also off the basis of we have a much higher tax base than many of the countries who give more.
So we need to look at this in the round. Mark Littlewood from the IA was on talk radio the other night and he gave a great explanation of what this is all about. He said it's about poor people in rich countries giving money to rich people in
and
poor countries.
100%.
And that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't get beyond trickle down to the people in Yemen, who happen to be getting bombed by Saudi Arabia. I mean, if you really want to stop it, maybe you should stop selling them arms.
That's a
different story.
But then, of course, there are so many trade
deals. So what
deals, are we
selling arms?
Things,
so take the money from the arms sales and give it to the the kids so they don't starve.
Of course, you have the government defending all of that, saying, yes, but look at the jobs that we defend, you know, by making this
stuff.
Yeah, and the worst of it is these millionaires are constantly... They're like Gary Lineker steroids.
Geldof.
You've got Geldof, Gary, and the God complex.
Yes.
I mean, this... Bob has got a bigger God complex than Femi and Bono put together. He just is this messiah thing, and he's not
the
messiah.
Pause moment. Have you just dropped the F-bomb?
I dropped the F-bomb.
Did you?
I meant that rather sort of irritating little puppy that keeps snapping at the ankles of Brexiteers.
I see. No, I didn't hear that.
No,
oh, I heard that one. I can hear it from a mile off. Oh,
oh sorry.
It came out in hives.
He'll start moaning about being mentioned again. No, but
Ethiopia
has still got a famine going on, right?
Yeah.
When was Live Aid?
1985.
1985, right? So that's what, roughly 36 years ago. So all the money that they raised at Live Aid didn't do anything.
But it made a lot of people... it made a few people very famous.
Yeah. It did. And
well
it made
done
a lot of people very wealthy.
Yeah.
And Bob Geldof was one of them.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well done, Bob.
So he's my plank, I'm afraid.
Well, I think that's a very, very good one.
That's a strong plank.
That's a strong plank.
My next one has to be Grant Shapps, I'm afraid. I mean, more hapless minister you could not wish to find. I mean, this is a bloke
on a second. Failing Grayling?
No. Grant Shapps is much worse. Don't forget, this is the same guy who was, when they announced Spain going into quarantine status in Spain, as the actual Secretary of State for Travel.
He was there.
For transport. He didn't even know they were going to do it. Because they don't let him into the room. I mean, he sits there literally outside with his schoolboy's cap on, waiting to be told what transport policy is. If you're the minister,
we have a minister
making it.
OK, let me give you another minister to see whether it's worse. Just because we need to test this. So I would say that if you had to replace one minister, so you've come up with Pretty Useless Patel.
Yes.
You've got
I like you, but come on.
Yeah, I like you too, but still. But we love you. But then you've got Grant Shapps.
Yeah.
And you probably can't pronounce the S word that you might hear. And then you've got Gavin Williamson.
Yes.
Oh, Gavin.
Well, he's
not
very good either.
No, but terrible. I would have him fired.
Yeah, but in this particular week, given loads of people went to Portugal on holiday on the basis that it was the only green country they could go to, which then gets turned amber
while they're there.
You know.
I mean, talk about scoring. This is like self-harming.
But then why did they go in the first place?
Well, because they were told absolutely, categorically, the green status of countries will not change.
Yeah.
They were told that. And they were also told that there would be a warning of plenty of time if it did change.
And
they were not given either of those things to be true.
And apparently the Portuguese are absolutely livid.
Of course
they are.
They're beside themselves.
They broke EU rules to allow that the crowds at the football game over in Portugal.
Yes.
And for us, they broke it for us and to help their tourism industry. Right. So they hired
loads
of
staff. Yeah, but that's because the Europeans wouldn't let the match come here, even though they should have done.
Well, but that's because they didn't want to come to Britain because it was outside the EU.
Well, quite.
You know, exactly. That was the point.
But think of all the staff now they have to lay off that they hired for the summer because Britain, this is our oldest ally, Portugal. This is not something we should be doing to a friend.
No.
So I think it was an act of harm to relations.
We should never have made them green in the first place.
Well, we should have made all of them green from now on.
No, of course they should
either make them green or not green.
But listen, the policies in Europe right now are that if you can travel between individual countries, we can go to Spain tomorrow. We don't need to show them a vaccine passport of any kind. You don't have to show that you've had a negative test. You can just go.
Yes.
But here's the problem. When you come back here, you have to quarantine.
Oh,
why?
But worse than that. Because, say, for example, France. So you say you can go.
You can.
I'm supposed to be going in 3 weeks. No, cancelled. All my travel plans cancelled. I got the thing saying we're not going to be
flying
there. No, I was going on a boat.
Yeah. Well, you see, you should be driving. I had a guy on the
show
the other day.
Yes, I was going to drive.
Who went on the Eurotunnel.
Yes,
thing,
and that's been cancelled as well.
Well, no, he called me from Greece, right? He's in Greece with his family.
Ooh.
He came off the train in Calais. He said there was nobody there. They literally waved him through. He didn't get asked for any papers. He went right through Belgium, nothing, no border checks. Went to Germany, no border checks. Mm. Drove into Italy, went to Brindisi, got on the ferry. First person that asked him for any papers was in Greece.
Wow.
Right? So if you want to drive across Europe, now's the time to do it.
Oh.
Just put your car on the train. Just put your car on the train, and apparently nobody bothers you.
No. And I get why
that's why I think people are so upset about this, because it's so inconsistent.
And it doesn't make sense anymore.
But there are so many... When it comes to travel, though, we have seen the levels of incompetence have been absolutely magnificent.
Staggering.
So when you have a look at the... I mean, it was only last week that Heathrow decided that they were going to have a red terminal. It's just like, why has it taken you 14 months to work this out?
What are they doing with their time?
Yeah, but even that's not a very good idea, because the red terminal is where everybody mixes, right? From all sorts of different countries. They're all standing next to each other. They're sitting next to each other. Again, you talk to people who have come through the system. It's ridiculous. It's pointless.
It is a pointless system. And then the other thing about quarantine, which is so stupid. So you quarantine when you get home, but you've used all manner of transportation methods to get home.
Yeah,
either it's contagious or it's not.
Well, it's not, is it? And what about Michael Gove? Michael Gove decides when he comes back from Portugal to see the Champions League that he's been pinged by the app because he was in close contact with somebody who had COVID, right? But he's not quarantining. Do you know why? Because he's invented a new trial system whereby if you test yourself every day, you can just go about your daily business.
So now we know that.
So,
Let's do it.
Why couldn't they have given all of those systems to the people from Portugal and just say, look, instead of worrying about quarantining when you get back, just come back when you were planning to. Mm. We'll give you a test that you have to take every day. And as long as you're clean, you can keep coming out.
And it's well and good, the government saying, oh, staycation, keep the money in the country. Have you tried booking a holiday?
There's
six of us. I can't book a holiday in Devon or anywhere nice.
There's
the price has gone sky high. Everywhere's fully booked.
Exactly.
So sorry, staycations are out for a lot of people.
We're thinking of going to Scotland.
Wow.
But, I mean, even Scotland
I love Scotland. I've just spent time with those
people. Well, we went to Turnberry one Christmas and it was great. And they've got these great lodges there. You'd love it, actually, if you haven't been already. But the thing is, you know, it's not easy now to book anything because everything's booked. Everything.
I know, everything's booked.
I would say Grant Shapps and Gavin Williamson's very similar because both have no idea what they're doing. Both are not told what their policies are going to be until the last minute when they have to then go on television.
But then there's another example.
And they don't know. Grant, if you ask Grant,
by the civil service that's supposed to work.
But if you ask Grant Shapps today what's going to happen tomorrow, he wouldn't know.
Of course he wouldn't.
You know, but this
he
has
didn't
to
know
be
what
the
happened
week.
Yesterday.
But this has to be the week that we put
I don't feel very safe with that lot in charge at the moment. They don't seem very ballsy. They haven't got any big boy pants on. They're all just like, oh, we have to just wait for the most panicky.
Oh, Boris has got big boy pants on.
Worst case scenario.
Liar, pants on fire.
No, he's had his big boy pants taken off him by Mrs. Johnson. I think you'll find. Mrs.
Johnson has them. He just needs to put them on up to his armpits with Super Boris on and go out and just freaking have a pair of balls.
Did you see the Times today where they said that it was a bit disappointing yesterday in Downing Street because Chris Whitty and Sir Patrick Vallance gave a bit of a downbeat briefing.
the shock
I mean, it's
of
the
it.
Only kind they give. When have you ever? I mean, have you ever seen Chris Whitty laugh? No, he's not.
You might as well play funeral music whenever they start talking.
He's no Jonathan Van Tam, is he?
I mean, at least Van Tam's got something about him.
Oh, he's absolutely hilarious.
But Valance and Whitty, oh my God,
so dreary.
Just horrendous. Anyway,
it's time
for your third, James.
My third. Okay, so my third is, as you may or may not know, if anybody listens to the Early Breakfast Show, they'll know that I'm not necessarily the world's expert on sport.
Yes.
What I do know is that sports people and sports governing boards are generally not very good at navigating that fine line between doing your sport and being good at it and politics.
Yes.
And here we have the ECB, or the English Cricket Board, and they've decided that because somebody's gone through and now selected England players' tweets from when they were a teenager, and they made some... The comments are... They're not even reprehensible. They're wrong, and they're foolish. It could be a heck of a lot worse. And
they're the sort of stupid jokes that teenagers make.
Yes,
I think is how you
they mean. Are. And to be honest, I've heard a lot worse from a lot more senior, whether government ministers or otherwise. So you know, in putting these things in the context, they need to be recognised that we all need to learn that social media is not where you put jokes which are or could be offensive to other people, unless you really have thought them through and have decided that's your strategy.
Or unless you're Ricky Gervais. Or in which case you can get away with anything.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Although I've never found Ricky Gervais funny.
Oh, he's so funny.
Oh, I think he's very funny,
Okay, well, I know.
I think it depends.
I'm more of a James Corden, sort of Romish Rankin-Aidan sort of
viewer. Oh, God. Really?
No.
Yeah. Oh, spare me.
I'm Monty Python, Benny Hill, Little Britain.
Benny Hill,
I mean, here's one for you. How weird is this, right? I don't know if you noticed that the BBC have started rebroadcasting Fawlty Towers.
Yes, love that.
I mean, I don't quite understand, though. I mean, I'm very happy they're doing it, but I don't quite understand their new policies on wokeness and how broadcasting old episodes
of
Fawlty
Towers. Well, they're making a point, aren't they? Oh, no, we're not woke.
Yeah, but they are, though.
Well, of course we know that they are. And we know that they're a ridiculous organisation.
Programmes which have quite a lot of offensive terms in them about foreigners.
They probably bleep them out.
They don't.
But I think that we should have a situation where we don't do that and we stop the cancelling and we make sure that, say, for example, if somebody is going to become an international sports person or a celebrity or and by all means go through the social medias, that either there should be help for somebody to go through it and to eradicate and get rid of stuff. And then secondly, they need
It's called scrubbing.
Yes, scrubbing. Or, you know, people need to be able to learn from things. In the same way that we can have a lovely conversation about Prince Harry. Mm. Here's the guy who dressed up in a Nazi uniform. Here's the guy who's made all sorts of jokes and called his colleagues things that he shouldn't do. And yet he's the Prince of Woke. Yeah. So if he can have done that stuff, which is far worse than this cricketer, by the way, has performed, said or done.
Ollie Robinson.
And we've got to stop this kind of overreaction.
But it's cruel. It's actually incredibly cruel to take a young man's life and career and destroy it publicly for something he put on as a teenager. God forbid anything I ever wrote as a teenager was down anywhere or photos or this, that, and the other.
I'm so old that, in fact, I was still writing on typewriters when I was a teenager.
I'm surprised they had those.
But I'm glad the government stepped in and said, you know, this is wrong. It is. It's so wrong. They should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah. It gets worse. They've now found somebody who was tweeting when he was 15, right? And they haven't named him because of his the fact that he was underage at the time. But apparently he was named on the Wisden's website for a period of time. So there will be some people who know who it is. I don't know who it is. And even if I did know, I don't know much about cricket, so I probably wouldn't recognise him anyway. But they've now made a big hole for themselves because they made him apologise, then suspended him, right? So he's now currently suspended from international duty, is Ollie Robinson. And now this other guy will have to be suspended because they've now made that particular kind of, yardstick for themselves. So they'll have to do it to everyone.
And you know, the left-wing Islamist appeasers are now saying, this is exactly what happened with Shamima Begum. You know, they were both 15, and we must just...
Yes.
How can you compare a silly tweet to a 15-year-old who went away committed?
Well, actually, funnily enough, you can compare it, because the people who think that he should be castigated for making racist remarks think that it's unforgivable, but she can be forgiven for joining a death cult.
As an adult, she showed absolutely no remorse, so it doesn't matter if she's 15.
No,
she just shows no remorse.
But I'm saying that the two things don't add up. We have to also throw the football world into this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because Gareth, the whole taking the knee thing. Will you stop it?
Yeah, well, Gareth Southgate doesn't seem to understand. Somebody actually said to me, and we'll get to the Labour Party in a bit, the football business is now doing to its fans what Labour did to its voters.
Yes, exactly.
Basically, they're ashamed of you. They don't really want you to be there. No. We think you might be a bit racist, you know, because you either voted for Brexit or because you booed taking the knee. It's absolutely ridiculous. Mm. And I was quite disturbed by Southgate's kind of holier-than-now attitude when he gave this press conference and said,
horrible.
We don't want to be answering questions about this throughout the tournament. We just want to talk about football.
But then
it's not about
it.
Politics. Well, in that case, don't take the bloody knee
then. Take the knee and don't make political statements.
And also, he talks about the group, right, like some kind of Handmaid's Tale. You know, oh, we all agree. Well, what happens if somebody comes into the team that doesn't want to take the knee? What happens then? What do you do then?
Exactly.
Do you say you can't play? Do you say you're not allowed to play for your country because you won't do this ridiculous gesture? They've even admitted it's a gesture.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing is that if you really want to tackle racism, not just in society, but in sport and elsewhere, you've got to stop these... they're almost kind of... as you say, the gestures, but they're also... They're riling people in the wrong way.
Yes.
And they're almost celebrating... I don't know, that, you know, we can be part of this and we're going to sort of make a point about the difference, as opposed to...
Well,
you get rid of racism when you stop seeing people's colour or making decisions based on things that you shouldn't. Like, let's just have a look at, shall we say, somebody's talent. Are you talented? Are you going to work hard? Are you going to be able to work with other people? Are you going to be able to perform incredible sort of miracles, whatever you do? And that's why we'll recruit you, we'll appoint you, we'll train you, whatever. And I don't care what background you come from. Have you got the skill and the talent? Yes, please, thank you. We'll have you. Mm. That's what we've got to do. That's what we've got to pick out.
But also, as you make, I mean, Gareth is not sounding like the sharpest crayon in the box either. Because he's literally saying, it's got nothing to do with BLM, right? And yet, hang on, he's chosen the signature gesture of a political Marxist movement as their anti-racism gesture. What about linking arms?
Yes, exactly.
What about, like they did with Millwall and...
Yeah, they could have done any number of other things.
Or guess what? They could have invented their own thing.
Stupid.
That's what I mean.
Why choose
but instead,
he
decided to be cussed and to be immovable and to say, well, we're going to keep doing it, whether you like it or not. And it's like, well, do you know, that's actually going to cause a problem because there will be people watching these games in pubs, in public spaces, you know, people will be drinking. But there will be people getting into rows about this.
Because
if you start booing television sets in public and everyone's drinking, you know where that's going to end up. It's going to end up with
people catching COVID.
Well,
I mean, you know, you don't want people booing.
Well, it's all right if they're wearing masks, you can't catch it, apparently, if you wear a mask.
Oh, right, okay.
But I mean, the other thing's interesting is the World Cup next year is in Qatar, right? 2022.
Mm. There were definitely no bungs involved there, were there?
No, there were absolutely no bungs involved there because FIFA's a very fine and upstanding organisation. It certainly does not contain anybody corrupt whatsoever.
And there's definitely no gravy train.
No, absolutely not.
And there's no one on it.
So I'll tell you what's interesting about Qatar. They throw homosexuals into jail. You're not allowed to be a homosexual in Qatar. You're also probably not really very likely to do terribly well if you happen to be somebody from Black Lives Matter in Qatar. So I wonder whether any of these footballers will refuse to go to Qatar to play in the World Cup because it's such a ghastly place.
I doubt it because virtue signalling doesn't promote them and their PR stunt people don't give them points, brownie points, for doing these gimmicks.
Mm.
And what's worse is I feel like British sport is under attack.
Yeah.
And what I feel is like the sport, the players are turning against their fans everywhere. And where is it going to end? Is Wimbledon, the players are going to have to start kneeling before a game?
Yeah.
Golf? Where
also,
does it
I don't
end?
Really need
and if they
to be
don't...
told by somebody with five Lamborghinis that we need to have a more equal society.
Detestable.
Thanks for that.
They've
but
got
then,
it wrong.
You know, but I do enjoy the whole sporting sort of dichotomy between, you know, the performance and the amount of money and the money that's really driving it.
Yeah.
And then this, you know, this sort of wanting to be...
There is another aspect to this, which I only discovered the other day. Not that I didn't know it before, but I'd sort of forgotten. We actually give the English FA, who run England football, £30 million a year of taxpayers' money. So they're not just representing their own views, they're not just representing Gareth and his band of merry men, they're actually representing this country.
Yeah.
Now, if this country is comfortable with them doing that, then fine, but I don't think we are.
No.
And I don't think the fans are. So therefore, they need to stop. It's as simple as that.
But that's what happens when you have organisations which are run by a whole load of stuffed appointed shirts.
Who are desperate to now look as if they know what they're doing.
Yeah, but this is what we've got in every organisation, where they've got the spare time and the money. We've got a lot of gesture politics going, which is about trying to say the right thing, do the right thing. No, just... just say you're not going to be racist, you're not going to be homophobic, you're not going to be discriminatory, and then you move on. And then you make sure that anybody who is, you know, removed from office or post or whatever it may be, or you give them some education. I don't mind either, because sometimes people make mistakes. Make sure that we
but
move on as a society.
The whole business of sport has become overtaken by these maniacs. I mean, I was watching TV news the other night, and there was they were showing a sort of a clip from some cricket match. It might have been the New Zealand test, I don't know. But they're all wearing these shirts that say, "We stand together against sexism."
I'm God, no, don't bring women into
this.
Why
are you wearing that on the back of your shirt when you play a cricket match?
And they had such tantrums when we wanted them to wear the poppy or pay some kind of respects to our armed forces and veterans. They won't do that.
No,
but they like the old freaking Marxist defund the police, you know, take down the patriarchy and destroy the nuclear family.
Yeah.
This is what they're kneeling for. And they're stupid if they think people don't connect that kneel with that political
movement.
Everybody
enjoys a nuclear family.
Yeah, I've destroyed one or two of those.
That's so revolutionary.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
It's
another story. Anyway, your third nominee.
Third nominee actually is a bit cringeworthy. It's New Look.
Oh, yes.
The clothing high street shop. And I know it's from last week, but it's got to be said.
Do you shop there?
Yes, I used to do a lot, actually. And now I've got four teenage girls. So this is why the story really makes me a bit sick. So they've started to sell padded bikini bras for little nine-year-old girls.
That's not right.
Which you never see, by the way. You've never heard of sort of boys' pants or trunks being filled out with foam to make their meat and two veg look bigger. But, for little girls, it's quite all right. Let's enhance the breasts of prepubescent little girls. Because who needs a childhood anyway? This is adults' twisted, weird fetish.
Did you see, though, there was a defence of this that I almost understood?
I don't.
And the defence...
There is no defence.
There is no defence.
The defence of it that I almost understood is that these were designed for an age group. So they were designed for an age group. Now, listen, I am...
What do you mean, an age group?
So for those who were slightly older, who had not developed perhaps as much as they would like to have done...
Oh, my God, this makes me throw up. Yeah. I can't say
that. That is what they were saying they were trying to achieve.
Because it's about sex. Why would you pad out a little girl's bra? It is sex sells. And there's no childhood as it is anyway for these poor kids. People make money. For the fat cats are lining their pockets with children who are surrounded by rappers, girls covered in oil with nipple tassels, talking about riding every guy in town.
But hang on a second. Have we got ourselves into a position where those sorts of products either are on sale or there is a demand for them? Because we have almost allowed children to become objectified because they're spending so much time on their phones and looking at things, and they want to be like that person.
Let's encourage it. Then.
I'm not saying we should encourage it.
Why would you exploit that, though?
But exactly. Yeah. But I'm saying that have we ended up in this place because of all the social and digital media?
So then say, actually, no, as adults, it's our duty to protect children and say, this is enough. And the worst of it is, for me, is who does it benefit apart from the people who are earning profits out of sexualizing children? Pedos and pervs.
Yeah.
No dad or man or woman or mother wants their little girl photographed on the beach by a load of pedos who are going to then sell their photos on the dark web. Because this is what happens.
Yeah.
When children are looking sexualized, especially girls, people take photos, they go on the dark web, and it's a horrific world. Children being sexualized more than ever now. Young boys from the age of 8 are being exposed to violent porn. That's their sex education. Girls are being sold, you know, value yourself on your tits and ass from the age of 9. And unless we, as families and parents, say enough.
Yeah.
I know I sound fussy, but it's
you would
hurting,
expect,
damaging
no, but also
children.
You would expect, would you not, a responsible organization big company that sells clothing not to be doing that? You just wouldn't, would you?
Because girls are susceptible. Little girls are too young to understand the consequences of trying to be sexy.
I mean, what are they going to do next?
So we can't leave it to them. Yeah,
Can't leave it to them, but then also you've got to deal with some of the other root cause problems, because you mentioned two of them, and one of them is certainly when I was growing up, if you had elder brothers, you knew that porn existed, but you certainly didn't have the onslaught of stuff that's available
the
and is there. No one and
on
no
there.
One's done anything about it, and it's just
well,
there.
You can't do anything about it because it's there. The
well,
point is, you could
you
try.
Probably could if
well,
you wanted
can.
To.
Well, you can. I mean, there are such things as shields. You know about this. Yeah. Every parent knows about, you know, internet shields. They don't work, because if kids want to look at something, they'll find it. They will. It's a simple...
It's a giant experiment, you know, that will have consequences that we don't even understand.
But the social and digital media, of the amount of children who are using TikToks and doing things and the videos and the whole... sexualization, if you like, of boys and girls has been going on successively, probably since pop culture arrived. Yeah. It's been getting worse and more prolific. Yes. And the question is, well, what do we do about it?
Yes, but the point is that
this is a manifestation of it.
Yeah,
but I think this is
I think this is a symptom, not a cause.
No, it's a cause, and it's something that doesn't have to be a cause.
Yeah.
Because you can have all those other causes you talk about. It doesn't mean you add more in.
I agree. I'm not trying to defend them, but I think they should be gone.
No, if you're a responsible company, you don't sell that kind of stuff.
Agreed.
You just don't. I think it's a good idea to sell it. Look how they are about climate change.
Yeah. You know, we want to be sustainable. Oh, an environment.
And then they go and make it in some Indonesian sweatshop.
We want unisex changing rooms. Blah blah blah. But let's pornize. What is it? Pornifies. What's the word? Little girls. Pornographies.
There you go.
Tiny little children.
I know.
It's disgusting and it's hypocritical.
It is.
These clothing shops. And I think I hate to sound like I'm like a Victorian hellfire.
No, you're not.
But I see the damage. I've brought up four girls.
You're
and
not
I see the world
are we going, are we going back to the Victorian times? I think we should.
Listen, there was a lot of good things happening.
I think
it
would be nice to sort of turn at the heel and show the collarbone to get the boys going.
No, I wouldn't know. Maybe a cup of tea.
Yeah, cup of tea. You know, a little trip to the beach. I know it's covered in rubble and litter. I'm going to go back to one of my old favourites, I'm afraid, Sir Keir Starmer, or Rodney,
as I like to call him.
Oh, Rodney.
Rodders. Because not only has he revamped his image by appearing on Piers Morgan's
Life
Stories.
Yes, he has.
Not only has he
very
decided
interesting,
to,
I felt, on yeah, that. Yeah. Very interesting.
His middle name is Rodney, and to then reveal he hated it so much that he had it removed from his wedding vows, which is kind of a weird thing to do, it seems to me. But all of the result of all of this new sort of look for Rodders has meant that his popularity rating has actually gone even further down. Rather than up. And he's now so unpopular, he's as unpopular as Jeremy Corbyn ever was at the base of his unpopularity.
And that is really... I'm surprised that you're picking Matt as blank, because I think that's a real achievement. to achieve...
It will be, tragically,
Corbyn
for
levels
Rodders,
of unpopularity. For Rodders, astonishing.
For Rodders, it will be his only achievement, because they're already in the Labour Party saying that Andy Burnham, who's lost the leadership battle twice, is even more popular than he is, right? Barely a quarter of the public... 24% think he has what it takes to be a good Prime Minister. He's 13 points behind Andy Burnham.
Oh, bless him.
Never mind Boris Johnson, who's somewhere up in the 70s, right?
Which is remarkable.
Among Labour supporters, less than half of him think he's got what it takes. 59% of them like Andy Burnham. 22% of the public are satisfied with Keir Starmer, which is down 14 points since April.
There needs to be a Keir Starmer blues song.
I mean, it's literally,
I thought I would win.
I know.
Because it's so depressing.
So Keir's score for being a capable leader has plummeted 18 points since September. He's now just on 26%.
But that's because... If you have a look at what he's achieved or what he hasn't achieved. So Captain Hindsight was one of my sort of favourite monikers, which I loved it.
Yeah.
And then what you realise is that, in fact, that was true and it became even truer because his only good performances at Question Time, Prime Minister's Question Time, is when he was looking at something in a legalised way. And, of course, he's a lawyer and he has that fantastic forensic training and being able to ask the
question. Well, you say that, but he doesn't, though.
No,
well,
he really doesn't.
On certain things, on the past, he's quite good at
at? He's quite good at putting together about four questions, and then the fifth one's the wrong one every time. I'm surprised he managed to get any convictions at all.
Now, I don't want to be too rude about lawyers, but lawyers are normally quite good at doing what they're told.
Be careful what you say about lawyers in front of Belinda, by the way.
Oh, are you a lawyer by training?
I married one.
No, she married one.
Oh, well, that's fine.
I did EU law, a master's, so that makes me a bit lawyer.
That's fine. Look, I come from a family of lawyers. There are plenty of lawyers in my life. I've worked. They do a useful function.
They have benefits.
They have benefits and they have a lot of money.
Not all lawyers are good. That's the point.
First of all, not all lawyers are good. Secondly, if you are of a legal mind, it means that you go right into the detail and you cannot see the bigger picture. And I'm afraid if you're going to be the leader of a party, and I don't care which political party or which angle, at least Corbyn had a vision. Nobody liked that vision,
That's
but he
true.
Had a vision.
And he had the courage of his conviction.
He did,
it, yeah.
And he remained anti-Semitic throughout.
He stuck to it.
He stuck to it. I mean, you know...
No surrender for him.
There definitely wasn't surrender. Whereas, and that's why Boris Johnson is successful. Boris sees the big picture. Yeah. He's able to identify it. He's able to put it in a way that people can like and grasp and go for it and support it. And then I just wish he was slightly better at picking the minions to execute because they're not so good at that.
That's true. So who then? Is Tony Blair making a comeback? Do you think?
No.
I can't see a Labour leader out there that has exactly what you're talking about. Seeing the bigger picture, you know, some kind of... grand, charismatic,
driven
guy.
Well, you know the guy who would be great, but who will never get a chance at it, is Brendan Chilton, that we have on our show quite a bit. He's actually from Labour Leave. He was part of the Labour Party that wanted to leave the European Union. And he's a former councillor from Ashford in Kent.
Not a chance.
But, I mean, he's quite well thought of in the party, funnily enough, but by the wrong part of the party, because the Parliamentary Party would never have him in.
No.
But he would win an election in any one of the Northern Red Wall seats, you know,
because
he believes in Brexit and he believes in the old-fashioned values of the Labour Party, which is actually to represent those people that you say no longer exist, the working class.
I do think, well, I don't think they exist certainly in the way that Labour would like them to. I think Andy Burnham could create some damage, but I think the problem is that he has a certain kind of support. Certain kind of support in a certain area, and then that's it.
Yeah. It's the same like Sadiq Khan. I think he's probably got aspirations and hopes to get the top job.
But I hope he does get the top job.
Because Burnham's ability will be in power forever.
I mean, there
Burnham is like one of those guys who's on the rebound tour of Spandau Ballet. You know, he puts on a polo neck and thinks
so he's... So Keir Starmer, though, in a way. They make a nice little boy band.
They do make a nice little boy band.
But that's
the other thing. Without Jason.
Yeah, but look, Andy Burnham, very good at articulating. I mean, Sadiq useless. Sadiq Khan.
He's above Starmer in the ratings, though, in this
part. But any human rights lawyer needs to stay well away from power.
But Sadiq Khan, he's fought his whole life to try and make better public transport, and he's having to make massive cuts. He hasn't stood up for them very well. He spent all their money on vanity projects and cycle lanes, and God only knows what else.
No traffic neighbourhoods.
I mean, no traffic neighbourhoods. Have you seen all the plant pots everywhere? People have come back to their city that they've been banished from for 14 months, and they've found that all the usual roads have been
cut
off. They can't get through. They can't park anywhere. Things aren't being picked up. There are holes in the road. I mean, the whole thing is a disaster.
Yeah, it is.
And mostly because of Sadiq useless.
Oh, yeah. Sadiq useless.
Useless. Who is quite high up the old table of Planks of the Year, but he hasn't been in it this week for that reason.
So Keir it is for life then.
I think Keir is definitely riding high. Funnily enough, just to show how even-handed Plank of the Week is, at the moment in the Plank of the Year ratings, Boris and Keir Starmer are on the same level.
Oh, wow.
Exactly the same number of points.
That's fair. Nice and balanced.
Isn't
good.
It?
Just how balanced?
You. Just very, very, very good. Now, so you might remember this is how it works. We have to get the 9 down to 3.
Yes.
So we all have to pick our favourite one of each. So do you want to start with Belinda's and you pick your favourite one of her three? So your three?
Pretty Eustace Patel.
Yes.
Sir Snobby Geldof.
Yes.
And New Look Boobies for Prepubescent Girls.
Right. You see, the New Look thing, although I get the passion, I think that's a symptom, not the cause. So I'm afraid they're gone.
Okay.
So it's between Pretty Eustace and it's...
I love that.
Sir Snobby Geldof.
I'm going to have to go for Pretty Eustace, mostly because I've really enjoyed that. And I think that was the one that probably riles more people. And I think if you're going for Plankorama, it's the one that annoys the most people, or alternatively something that we suddenly realise that we should be annoyed about. And I think we should be annoyed about that. So it's both of my belts.
Now, I should say, by the way, before we go any further, that we will once again carry over Harry and Meghan. Congratulations, guys, for having another baby.
Lily Bett. You can only do that.
Diana... Yeah, I mean,
Mountbatten wins.
Mountbatten wins.
But also, how?
Not because they want her to make any money
off,
in the future.
Most people can't afford to do that. Welcome to the real world. Yeah. Oh, Harry, really understand the real world? Well, we've got staff to pay for. Blah, 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 hot, cold, running staff and the things and the stuff and the security and the living in our God knows how many million pounds.
Do you think he's going to put himself on furlough?
Well, he never lost his job because of the blooming Hitler and Nazi stuff he did in his past. It was privilege-free speech for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, congratulations, though. Lovely baby.
Congratulations.
It's only a good thing.
They should just have a little sort of memorial that you could just sort of put on the bench.
Listen, if he's going to stop talking for 5 months, I salute him. Yeah. And if she's not going to appear on video for 5 months, I'm more than
happy. But she's just released that wretched book that's crap.
The father and child relationship, the bench, when her relationship with her father is probably one of the most famous bad relationships you could ever have.
Exactly. And she's fallen out with the whole of her in-laws.
Right. Yeah. Also, he slagged off his own father as well, so that's a great one.
They're not the
prime
sort of shining examples of family relations.
No, exactly. Oh, yeah, let's create our own family. It's going to be lovely.
So do you want to pick my best one of my three? So mine is Sir Keir Starmer,
Rodders.
Grant Shapps. And Jenny Eclair.
I'm Jenny Eclair all the way for
Jenny
me.
Eclair.
I don't know if...
No, it's your choice.
Is it my choice? Just because she epitomises all that I think has been wrong with this sort of snitching, bitching, hateful rhetoric against
judging
and ostracizing. Yeah. You are no longer pure enough to be in my pure
Get out of my
God
train
circle.
Right.
It's like we're all heretics and they're the saints. So she gets it from me because she reflects what's going on. In
so
other
I get to choose yours.
So you do get to choose mine.
Yeah.
So, I've got, blimey, who have I got?
I know the cricket people because I'm like,
yes, so we've got the ECB.
Yes.
We've got Marek Sakovic. Is that his name?
Whatever his name is,
The EU bloke.
Yeah,
don't
skip of a tongue with that surname.
Yeah, that one.
Captain Sausage.
So, we've got Captain Sausage. We've got Captain Shirtoff.
Oh, yes.
And we got the ECB.
Yeah, I think it's got to be the ECB, hasn't it? I mean, this particular week, it has got to be.
Bullying, career destroying that poor chap, Ollie. No,
I mean, I feel in some ways slightly guilty that we haven't given Gareth Southgate a special mention, but we have given him a special mention.
Yeah, I said he wasn't the sharpest crayon in the box.
He's, I mean, but we could have made him one of the players, but we'll kind of put him under the same umbrella, I think, maybe, as ECB.
Imagine turning on his fans like that.
I don't think
he's done now.
Well, they also paid their own money to go and watch the game.
Can't he be a mini plank? Like
we might have to have a plank appendix.
Plank arena.
Unless, of course, he's small and insignificant, and you call him plankton.
Plankton, very good.
Plankton, oh, look at that.
That would work on very many
Gaza,
levels, actually.
So
plankton.
Many levels.
That would work on lots of levels, yeah. So, Priti Patel, the ECB, and Jenny Eclair, those are the three.
Oh my God.
You know, what a collection.
It's a good one. This is good.
This is good.
This is good. She hasn't been in it that much, actually, I don't think, over the course of time. So, I mean, I would tend to go with the ECB only because it's their week, it seems to me. Yeah. Priti Patel, I think, might get nominated again.
She will get nominated plenty of times.
I do.
I think she's a recurring, you know, she's in the sort of recurring...
All talking, no trousers.
And the thing is that because, I mean, Jenny Eclair, I think she was funny for about 1 week in the early 90s.
Yeah.
Like Terry Christian. Look at him. He's like, oh, no.
Even he can't remember that.
No.
Yeah, no.
So, and the For all sorts of reasons.
And so, you know... The irrelevance means that it's just like, you know, some irrelevant, somewhat past it, somewhat has been, has used some expletives and got some publicity.
I didn't say, actually, she did delete the tweet after a while because she got so much grief for it.
Well,
not because she didn't believe it, just because she got grief for it, so it doesn't count.
She put one out saying, I've decided to delete the tweet because I maybe was wrong to use such foul language.
Yeah, but hashtag be kind.
But be kind.
I'm with the cricket, the ECB for me, are cruel and what they're doing to this poor boy, Ollie.
I think so.
And also it sets a terribly dangerous precedent for all the other young boys hoping to join the game.
Should we make pretty useless number two, then? I think we should.
Yeah, I'm happy with that, obviously.
Jenny Eclair gets bumped down to three on the grounds of irrelevance.
Irrelevance, exactly. You know,
she's and we've given her enough platform now. She no more oxygen for
this
Jenny.
This is the most publicity she's had in about 10 years. Absolutely right. So, England Cricket Board, then. Thank you very much, both of you. Plank of the week. I hope you don't make it for next week. I hope you fix up your situation. But the ECB, the England Cricket Board, absolute planks. Well done. Thanks to James Max and Belinda DeLucy. We'll see you next time.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.